Wherever the art of medicine is loved, there is also a love of humanity. Welcome to the episode 29 of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney. I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete, hoping to bring you good information on living a plant-based lifestyle. Tonight we have another interview with a PharmD I think that you'll really like. His name is Dustin Rudolph. Like Elise Capo from last week, he went into the field of pharmacology to help people. He realized that there was potentially a much more benign medicine called food. And both of them have actually made their passion to learn and to educate others on the healing properties of plant-based nutrition and food in general. So I think you'll enjoy his interview as it comes up. Couple things beforehand. I just wanted to give you a quick fun-filled fact. Again, if you haven't checked out Dr. McGregor's site, nutritionfacts.org, there's a lot of great information. Today I saw an article about sweet potatoes and what's the best way to cook them. You know, I guess the latest craze has always been to bake them. You know, growing up, my grandmother always boiled all our potatoes. Turns out that boiling potatoes actually preserves more nutrients than baking. Boil with the skin on, obviously, as opposed to taking the skin off. But when you boil the sweet potatoes, you break down the cell wall a little bit, so the bioavailability of the nutrients is increased. Also, the glycemic index, or the insulin spike after eating a potato, is half that boiled and baked. Again, eat the skin because there's 10 times more antioxidant power in the skin than in the flesh itself. That approaches the antioxidants of blueberries. And when you bake them, two-thirds of the nutrients are actually wiped out, and the vitamin A is actually decreased by 80%. So I've got to say that from here on out, I'll probably be boiling my sweet potatoes. From an endurance standpoint, it's been kind of puny on my end. I'm still suffering from my injuries from my fall with the dog. My wrist is almost better. I hope to hit back at the pool tomorrow. But my running has been very sluggish and essentially non-existent. I try to do some running drills to kind of pull things loose, and I really pulled things loose, so that's not so good. Hopefully that'll be getting better soon. So I'm cycling every morning on the trainer because I've been afraid to go out because of my wrist. So I do think this weekend I'll be able to go back out on the road with my bike, so that'll be good, get some fresh air. I'm not much of a gym person as far as inside. I'd much rather be outside, no matter the weather, and I particularly like the mornings when the sun's coming up. So I have missed that. I think that's not been great for my psyche, not being able to do that. Of course, being injured, it always forces me to go back to the basics as far as core stability exercises. So I've been really hitting those hard. I encourage any of you that do any kind of endurance sports to make sure you're doing a lot of core stabilizing exercises, planks, opposites. You can look those up if you haven't done them before, but a plank is much safer than doing a sit-up as far as abs go. There's been published reports looking at the pressure on the lumbar spine and the load, and you know, you get much more bang for your buck doing a plank and less impact to your lumbar spine, so that's kind of the way to go from that end of things. And then, of course, some squats and deadlifts various things I've been trying to do to get everything straightened up and back in working order. So this too shall pass, but it's been a little bit, I'm getting tired of fighting the discomfort, so to speak. Anyhow, so we'll get on with the interview with Dustin Rudolph. Again, he's a PharmD from Florida. He wrote a book called The Empty Medicine Cabinet, The Pharmacist's Guide to the Hidden Danger of Drugs and the Healing Power of Food. He nicely goes through the book and compares the risk-benefit ratio of medicines versus food. And then at the end, he kind of ties it all. He actually breaks it out by disease, and then by the end of the book, he gives 15 recipes and some menus that he goes by. So It's a great beginner's guide to eating plant-based, whole foods, no added oil. I think you would enjoy it. It's a good addition to any library. So without further ado, here's Dustin. Welcome, Dustin Rudolph. He is a PharmD and the author of The Empty Medicine Cabinet. I'm pleased to have him on the show this evening. It's even more special that he's a Floridian as well, so he's almost in my backyard. So it was a great to get to know you, Dustin. Welcome.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm so glad that you have me on the podcast show.
So, you know, PharmD, that's a long way from plant medicine for the most part, unless you go back to Dr. Quinn and the digoxin plant and, you know, some of those things. But so how did your plant-based journey get started?
Well, it is a long ways from plant medicine. It's my journey actually got started way back in fourth grade. Is, you know, when little kids grow up, they always, people ask them what they want to do, and people asked me what I wanted to do, and way back in fourth grade, I told everybody I was going to be a pharmacist. And I didn't have a clue what that meant, other than our pharmacist wore a nice, shiny white coat, you know, behind the counter, and I liked him. And his name was Todd. Lived in a small town in rural Montana, southeast Montana, and I grew up and I wanted to be like Todd. So since the fourth grade, I had wanted to be a pharmacist. So I always loved math and science. Ended up going to pharmacy school and, taking all the courses, math and science for that. I really loved it. Didn't have any idea about plant-based nutrition and the role that it plays in health and wellness until I was about 8 years out of college. So I had, it was an eye-opener for me. I ended up reading the China Study, which I'm sure many of the listeners out there have read, and that really got me hooked. You know, Dr. Campbell's work was all evidence-based, and, you know, like you, when I went to school, we were told to be evidence-based and, you know, have studies to back up what we're doing, and now we practice medicine. And that's what the China Study was. So from that moment on...
Well, that's a little bit less. So I'm sorry. So you read the China Study...
Read the China Study, and from that moment on, I was hooked. You know, it's evidence based. It works. It's the most effective, safest, and least costly ways to bring a human being back to health if they have a number of the chronic diseases that we see in the healthcare field and medical field. And you know, why not jump aboard? I mean, you have to. I mean, I just think that you have to, as a clinician, you have to jump on board at something like that.
So were you practicing in a hospital setting or an outpatient setting as a pharmacist?
When I had gotten out of pharmacy school, I graduated and I went right into retail or community pharmacy. I had done that for about 4.5 to 5 years, and then I made the transition and switch over to the hospital side of pharmacy. So I've been practicing in hospital pharmacy, in an acute clinical setting, in hospital inpatient care, since 2006, so about 9, going on 10 years now, I've been doing that. But regardless, plant-based nutrition is definitely the wave of the future for medicine, and I think we're slowly but surely getting more and more medical professionals and healthcare professionals on board, just because, you know, it works. Like you said, it works. And it's good for patients, and that's why we get into healthcare. That's why all of us practitioners get into healthcare, is because we want to help people get their health back, and that provides the way to do it.
So what led you to when did the book come around?
My book, The Empty Medicine Cabinet. That actually. Well, once I had read the China Study, I had, you know, started to change my own personal habits, changing what I ate and, you know, how I grocery shopped. And it took me about a year to transition into becoming whole foods, plant-based, you know, no animal products and minimal or no processed vegan and vegetarian food. And during that time, probably about 6 months into my transition, I thought, you know, this is too important not to share. So I started my website and my blog and started writing just articles and about all this information to share with others to be another voice in the field. And then about a year into it, a year to a year and a half into it, I had gotten my website and my blog up and running, and I figured, well, the next step, I've got to write a book, you know, because that's the next step. Put everything in one nice little package, and that's how the Empty Medicine came to be. So I wrote about many of the chronic diseases in there, and basically just wanted to cover what the chronic disease is, whether it's heart disease or diabetes or cancer or an autoimmune disease, kind of how these diseases develop in the body, what they do to the body. And then I wanted to let people know that, you know, there are medications to treat these diseases. However, the medications often don't work nearly as well as changing diet and lifestyle. And so I compared, you know, medication and then the diet and lifestyle with a lot of these diseases and how they worked. And then basically the other half of the book is telling people how to do the diet and how to do the lifestyle. Because to have the information, knowing why is important, but then you have to know how to do it. So I kind of put everything all together in one, and it's just a nice little guide. It's a nice little resource to use if you're new to plant-based nutrition and you want to get out there and start making these changes in your life, or even if you're interested or you have a family member who's suffering from a chronic disease, it's a wonderful resource to have for you. It's a great starting point. Now, I've gotten some good feedback from others saying that it's a very well-written book and it's easy to read. So there's a lot of complex information in there, but I tried to do my best to make it easy to read so that the average person can get a lot out of it.
Yes, well, I will wholeheartedly endorse that it's a very well-written book. You're absolutely right. You break down the different diseases and why it can compare whether medications versus, you know, and how plant-based nutrition and how one might help you. And then, you know, on the how-to side of it. Yes, yeah, so I agree. It's a very well-written book. When you started all this, we take some of the same pharmacology courses, you know, medical school versus, you know, pharmacology students. You know, we learn about how the drugs work, and especially in the hospital setting, you know, you're basically treating disease. And of course, even in the private setting, you know, people come to you and you recommend medication to them. Was it just shocking when you started really getting into some of this research after the China study to find out just how little some of these medications do as far as prevention and certainly no reversal of disease?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that because it just kind of blows you away. Like back in pharmacy school, and I'm sure back in medical school, actually before we even got into those professions, the professional school portion of it, we all had to take statistics. And, you know, I took statistics during my first couple of years of college, and, you know, I wish I would have paid more attention because, you know, you're coming out of high school and you're a teenager and you're just kind of going along and doing what you do and taking the courses that you're told to take. And I wish I would have paid more attention in statistics because it's so important to understand the studies and understand what you're looking at and what it means and how the numbers are reported and how these studies are designed. Because if you don't really understand that, you can see how a lot of the studies are reported, like in the news. And then, like, you know, some brand new drug will come out and they'll say it's like the best thing ever. And then, lo and behold, a couple years later, now there's a huge problem with it because there's an aftermarket side effect that didn't get reported, or, you know, people are dying because, you know, you know, maybe it causes horrible liver disease or something. And it was amazing to look at. Now I can understand a lot of these studies where a lot of these drugs, they really helped very few people as far as morbidity and mortality, you know, disability and death. It's, most drugs are less than 10 or even 5% beneficial for patients. And I just couldn't believe that, because when you hear commercials on TV and news reports, they'll say that, oh, there's a 40 or 50 or 60% reduction in heart attacks or strokes or whatever it is that the drug is treating for patients. So you think, oh, that's really good. But unless you understand where they're getting that 40 or 50% and how they're reporting the statistics, then you don't really understand what's going on and all that. And unfortunately, what's reported in the numbers, in the news, in the media, and you know, in magazines and stuff, is not the true actual benefit, which is called absolute risk reduction with a lot of these medications. And I'm sure you've seen the same in your line of work.
Right. Most of the reports are relative risk reduction, and that'll be, you know, instead of, like you say, the absolute. So you get this relative change, but it might be one person in a study of 10,000 when you actually look at the absolute risk reduction. Or benefits of treatment. So treating 10,000 people to get two people that have their blood pressure, you know, drop a certain amount. I heard a great, it wasn't nutritionalfacts.org, I can't remember, Dr. Furman this morning on one of his talks, you know, was talking about, you know, a tablespoon of flaxseed will decrease your blood pressure 15 millimeters of mercury. There's really no blood pressure medication out there that can come close to that. You know, and just, you know, on and on and on. And of course, if you just, you know, if these people can, if you can just get the salt out of your diet, you can get your blood pressure down so much quicker than, you know, most of the medications.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, the relative risk reduction is what gets reported. So just for the listeners out there who want to understand that, when they report the benefits of a drug or a medication, and say there's, you know, 30% reduction in stroke risk or 50% reduction in heart attacks, usually what happens is, you know, you have hundreds or even thousands of people in the study. And where that 50% comes down, 50% reduction comes down, they only actually look at the people who actually have heart attacks. And very few people out of the hundreds or the thousands that are in the study actually have heart attacks. You know, they always have a placebo group that take a sugar pill, and then they have a group that takes the drug, the medication that's being studied. And, you know, probably less than, you know, 5 or 10% of the people are actually affected and have a heart attack or a stroke or whatever the disease outcome, whatever the outcome it is you're looking for. So when they say that there's a 50% reduction, it's only between the people who actually had heart attacks or strokes in both groups, in the placebo group and in the medication group, whereas, you know, the other 80 or 90% of the patients that are in the study that never had anything happen to them, they just kind of forget about those people, and they don't report the percent reduction in heart attacks based on all the people in the study. It's just based on who had events.
Yes, it's very disillusioning. For
it can
sure.
be very deceiving.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, and again, going through medical school, you know, I've been a very big advocate. You know, going by the rules. Let's treat to a cholesterol less than 200, an LDL less than 100, using statin therapies. You know, and perhaps some other medications to achieve those numbers. Let's achieve a glucose less than 100. Let's achieve a blood pressure less than 120 over 70. And the reality of it is, even achieving all those numbers doesn't do a whole lot for people if you do those in light of the standard American diet.
Right, because then you're just dying with really good numbers.
Yes. So let's go through, you know, you went through and, you know, you looked at cholesterol and just like, you know, statin therapy, for instance, You basically say 1 to 2% decrease, 1 to 2% decrease in heart attacks. Is that correct?
Yeah. 1 to 2% decrease in heart attacks has an absolute risk reduction with statins, and I believe it's about the same as far as stroke reduction. And primarily when they found people who benefited from it, it was normally people, that 1 or 2% that did benefit, it was normally if they had a previous heart attack or stroke in the past. And if they didn't have a heart attack or stroke in the past, I think it's even less than 1% who actually benefited from it. And actually, it's called primary prevention, where if the person has never had a heart attack or stroke, the absolute risk reduction in overall death was 0% of statins. So, you know, the different individuals will have different benefits from the same drug based on their risk factors. But I think overall you can still look at that and say, well, geez, even at the very best, only 2% of people were helped. And now, I never tell people not to take the drug, because that's really their choice. Maybe if they're in that 2% and they actually do avoid a heart attack and death, well, then that's probably the best drug that's ever been invented, you know. But if they're not in that 2%, then, you know, basically they're just flushing their money down the toilet, and they have potential side effects that come with it. But there's no way to predict whether you're going to be in that 2% of benefits or you're not going to be in that 2% of benefits.
You could be in the 2% that benefits or the 10% that have some side effects, as opposed to the eloquent study that Dr. Campbell just published, that he had one event and I think 107 people, you know, so versus, and then, you know, compare that to the Courage trial where, you know, most of the, there was like a 19% event rate with stents or medication. So, you know, it's clearly the benefits of a plant-based diet with, you know, from a side effect standpoint and from a benefit standpoint, you know, far outshine. And then let's, you know, the other thing is, you know, treating, you know, well, diabetes, you know, with all the medications. I'm sure in the hospital setting you see people on 4, 5, 6 different medications for their diabetes.
Oh, absolutely. Usually they're on a handful of pills or, you know, tablets or capsules, and then to go along with that, when those stop working, then they put them on insulin. And then, you know, from there, it's lifelong usually, unless the person really is motivated to change their diet and change their lifestyle, they're going to be on those medications and that insulin for the rest of their life.
Are you able to, at the hospital that you're currently employed at, are you able to do any nutritional counseling?
No, I'm not able to do any nutritional counseling. In the hospital setting, pharmacists are actually mostly behind the scenes, so we don't get a lot of patient contact. And then even if we did, since we're not a doctor or a dietitian, we're not actually legally allowed to counsel somebody and tell them a specific diet for a specific disease. That's actually it's outside the scope of our practice, so unfortunately, and we're not legally allowed to even do that.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, have you noticed that when people come in to the hospital, especially, you know, now with the age of electronic medical records, they'll be on, you know, 4 or 5 blood pressure medications and 4 or 5 diabetic medications. But even when they hit the very terrible hospital food, their blood pressure and sugars plummet just by basically caloric control and salt control.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get one day where we'll get to a point where we're actually feeding people in the hospital healthy diets, but we're a long, long, long ways from that. And I don't know when that's going to change. Hopefully, I think the president of the American College of Cardiology just came out in the last year or two supporting a plant-based vegan diet for heart disease. So once we get people like that in that kind of position to change the culture of our professional organizations, you know, it will trickle down eventually and have an effect. And then the best thing that can happen is for patients to actually start eating this way. And so, you know, we're all human. Eventually, you know, we're going to need medical care at some point in our life for something. You're not bulletproof just because you go on a plant-based diet. And when we do need that medical care, if we do end up in a hospital, say, for an accident or whatever it is, if you eat whole foods, plant-based, and you say, I'm not going to eat that food, well, they're going to have to give you something to eat. So if we have patients actually stand up and take a stance, that will really change things too. We're a long ways from that, but I think that we'll eventually get there.
Do you have a vegan or plant-based option at your hospital?
I'm with the Adventist group, and they're one of the most plant-based friendly groups of all the healthcare organizations and hospitals out there. So, you know, a lot of the long-term studies that have shown benefits of plant-based nutrition have been in the Adventist people. So that is kind of nice to see that change and to see options available. But I know that a lot of hospitals, I mean, they still have fast food restaurants in the first floor. So we still have a long ways to go. I think we'll get there. It's just going to take a cultural change.
So there's not fast food in your hospital?
No.
That's good. That's good. When there, you know, the hospital here in Port Charlotte, well, actually in Punta Gorda, initially was a Seventh-day Adventist hospital, and it was sold before I got here, but I was told that at that time it was a complete vegetarian kitchen. You know, so if you went to that hospital...
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, but obviously not anymore. But, you know, and you know, when it was that way, people accepted it. You know, I don't think that, you know, people would be that shocked if, you know, you just did it as a hospital, that if you were plant-based, you know, and people started, obviously, started feeling better. But if that was the only thing available and you had to, you know, it was the other way around where, okay, well, if you want meat, you're going to have to bring it in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, yep. I think that would be a much better way. So hopefully, you know, we can make that turn.
And I know that our hospital has gotten bought out by the Adventist group too. And one of the first changes that they made in the cafeteria was they said no pork and no shellfish is allowed here. So that was nice. You know, that's a positive step forward. So no bacon bits on your salad. You know, so, which is great, you know, and I don't think anybody really misses it. And they have a lot of plant-based friendly options there and that vegan and vegetarian options that patients and visitors and staff can eat. So it really is wonderful.
So your role in the hospital is that of a pharmacist. Outside of the hospital, you're promoting your book. What else do you have going on?
Yeah, outside the hospital, outside my pharmacy career, I just work really, really hard to try to keep my website up to date with new articles and events that come up. I'm, you know, doing speaking engagements for my book and book signings and trying to get out there and just help promote the plant-based message and help others in the field partake in things like this with you, you know, interviews like this. And the more that we get the word out there, especially the more medical professionals that jump on board and start to tell patients about this stuff, the more that patients are going to start expecting it. And like I said, I think we're a long ways from that for all patients to expect different, you know, a different option other than pills to treat their diseases. But I would hope that towards the end of my career, you know, in 20 or 30 years from now, it'll be much more mainstream. And, you know, I've already seen, I'm sure you have too, seen the changes in the amount of people going vegetarian or vegan. And it's, you know, people actually have heard of that word or understand it, where 10 or 20 years ago, they'll look at you funny because they don't even know what the word vegan means. So I think that's all positive. It's very, very positive.
Do you have colleagues in the hospital that are, you know, they obviously know that you've written a book on plant-based nutrition? You know, have you curbsided on, you know, what is this, how to go about it? Have you had hospital employees change because of the book?
I have. I've actually have, I'm not shy about talking about it and letting other people know about the benefits of plant-based nutrition. And I've found that a lot of pharmacists and other colleagues, you know, physicians and nurses, that once you, present the information and the evidence, they're actually interested. If nothing else, they their ears kind of perk up. And they're like, oh, I've never heard that before. I've never heard that you could just reverse heart disease just by changing your diet, or that diabetes is actually completely reversible just by changing your diet, and that there's this other way. And, to me, and probably to you, it's so secondhand now that we're like, why doesn't everybody know about this? But it is really nice to have a chance to talk to other professionals in the field and plant a seed in them, Not everybody changes overnight, but I have had colleagues that have completely changed over to plant-based, whole foods plant-based. And I've also had other colleagues that, they haven't changed completely, but they have made some improvements, and where they didn't eat any fruits and vegetables, and now they're starting to include them on a daily basis. So any step forward is a positive step forward, I always say. And it's just nice to see some kind of improvement or acknowledgement that, from fellow colleagues that, wow, this really is legitimate, and I need to look into this, and take a look at this.
Do you have a copy of the book sitting on your desk at work?
I always have a copy with me, actually. Good. I always carry a copy with me, because you never know when you're going to run into somebody who needs information.
And you have stories, different people's stories in the book. How did you come into contact with these people or know their stories?
Well, some of them I actually had been put in contact with some other colleagues in the plant-based nutrition field. And then I had called them and interviewed them and asked them if they would include their story in my book. One lady in particular I actually met just by chance. It was kind of funny. I met her. Her name is Vicky, and I met her just by chance at a local raw food vegan cafe that we have just 10 minutes down the street from where I live. And she had actually come in. She had lupus. And she had actually come into there because she had just gotten diagnosed with lupus. And she did not want to take the pill. She had read about methotrexate, which is what a drug used for lupus. Has a ton of side effects, really nasty side effects, and some other immune suppressants and steroids like prednisone and whatnot that people get put on for lupus, and the side effects of these medications are just horrendous. And she looked into that, and she was like, there's no way, I'm not doing that. She told her doctor, I'm not going to do that. There's got to be a different way. So her doctor really didn't know about plant-based nutrition, so he didn't have much to give her for other options. So she was searching on her own. She went into this raw food cafe. I just happened to show up, and the owner of the raw food cafe actually is a former oncology nurse. And she opened up her business because she got out of nursing, out of oncology, because she saw all these benefits in plant-based, raw foods. And she wanted to help people that way. So she wasn't there at the cafe at the time, but her husband was, and I'd been there before and met them before. And when I came in the door, he said, hey, he took me off to the side and said, hey, do you know anything about lupus? And I go, oh, of course I do. He goes, well, that lady over there came in, and she just got diagnosed with lupus, and would you have a few moments to sit down with her? So I said, sure, absolutely. So I ended up sitting down with her and talking to her about all of this diet and this lifestyle and how it works and how it's really effective, especially in the early courses right after you get diagnosed with an autoimmune disease like lupus. It works very, very well as long as you're 100% committed. You've got to be 100% committed because these autoimmune diseases are really, really severe diseases that you need to get on top of. And she was like, I'll do anything. I've read the side effects of the drugs, and I do not want to take those drugs. And they don't work very well, and she's right. And from that day forward, she just made an amazing turnaround and changing her diet and her lifestyle. And, you know, it was about 6 months to a year later, she went back to her doctor and got her blood test done to get her rheumatoid factor and her anti-nuclear antibodies done to see if she had lupus markers in her blood. And there was nothing. Everything was normal. Her symptoms went away. She felt better. She didn't have joint pains. Her hair wasn't falling out anymore. She just felt 110% different. And to this day, I still stay in contact with her, and she's just doing wonderful. And it's just so rewarding to run into patients like that and people like that who are willing to jump on board and really give it their all because they see just an unbelievable turnaround in their health. I'm sure you've seen the same in your line of work.
Yeah, that's an amazing story, though. I mean, lupus can be a devastating disease, and to think that, and of course, as you probably are aware as well, once it gets into the stage where people are in the hospital, kidney failure, lung problems, there's a whole host of things that go wrong, blood disorders. It can really ruin, and typically a young woman's life. You know, it typically happens in, people 30s, 40s, 50s. You know, it can really take the best part of their lives from them that they fight, they spend fighting for their life. And the medications that we throw them, like you say, have all these tremendous side effects. The steroids make them blow up. Then they get diabetes, the methotrexate with the liver disease. And it's like, if you could just get, that was such a save, to a plant-based diet, all it took, getting rid of the dairy and a plant-based diet to reverse this. If you just want to scream to the world that, it like John McDougall does, it's the food. And if you could just get people to, to listen to this, so much pain and suffering would be, avoided with such simple measures. I mean, that's a fantastic story.
And one thing I didn't even realize at the time when I was talking to her right away and the first couple times that, we had done some follow-up contact after that, because people always need a little bit more help they need more than once to sit down with you and kind of get through and get started on this. But after she had gotten and her disease put it into remission and had no problems, she ended up telling me that her dad had actually died of lupus and that she had had to see her dad suffer for so many years and so horribly with this disease. And when I found that out, I was just like, I was almost in tears. I was so happy for her and just struck by her story. So, she saw her own father go through all that, and she did not want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, she was looking at a death sentence. Yeah, I mean, it was a death sentence that was completely reversed, basically.
Yep, absolutely. She's just been wonderful.
Yeah, it's... It's very rewarding to have people feel better and adopt a plant-based diet, and their joint pains go away. They drop some weight. They can move around more. They get off some medications. You don't want to practice the other way anymore. I don't know about you, but it's like I don't want to talk about the other stuff. That's a last resort, and if people are dead against doing plant-based, then, we talk about the other options. But I could sit and talk about, plant-based medicine all day with them, to try, and especially if there's any light of, any reasonable chance that people, may change, I'm all in, and it's so exciting for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way. And I wish we had a medical system, a healthcare system that actually reimbursed providers for doing this, but there's no money in wellness. There's only money in sickness. I tell people all the time, if I could actually make a living by telling people to eat fruits and vegetables to fix all their problems, then I wouldn't be a pharmacist. But right now we don't have a system that does that. So hopefully someday we will get there, but we're not there right now. We have a lot of work to do.
Yes, it's very frustrating. And like you say, ultimately, even if the medicines are minimally effective, sometimes it comes down to it that, that's all you have. One thing that, hits me close to home, my father passed away from Alzheimer's and dementia. And, he family history is, you know, just diabetes and heart disease all over the place. But to watch, you know, somebody that, you know, was very mechanically inclined, a businessman, deteriorate and have trouble counting money, have trouble, you know, he loved to work in the garage and do things with lawnmowers and different and put things together, and he couldn't do that. And, you know, the medications that, you know, were initially prescribed, we actually stopped them. They actually made him so much worse. You know, even suicidal and, you know, zombie-like. And it's so unfortunate because, you know, I see people in my office quite a bit, and of course it brings back all those memories, that, you know, people are starting to have memory difficulty and they're started on these medications and things just snowball downhill. And it's also, on the other hand, very difficult for these elderly couples to get their nutrition changed.
I hear you on that one, and I feel for you because, you know, I'm seeing the same thing on my grandmother. She has Alzheimer's, and we're, you know, she's forgetting who people are and can't remember what, you know, someone says in a conversation a minute and a half ago, so end up repeating the same thing. And I, you know, she's such a lively person and a friendly person, and I'm sure, like your father, was so active and involved in life, and to see somebody, especially a close family member, get to the point where they, you know, are having a hard time functioning and remembering and just doing for themselves, that's really tough. And there really aren't any medications that work at all for Alzheimer's. There's very few in for Alzheimer's in the first place, and the ones that we do have really just don't do much of anything. They, at the best, they might delay progression a little bit of the disease, but, you know, that's one of those diseases that it's tough to see somebody get to that point, because there is no reversing Alzheimer's disease just by changing your diet or any other means that I know of. I think that stresses the point of prevention, you know. Just like saving money for retirement when you're in your 20s and 30s and 40s, the earlier you get started on this, the better. It's never too late to change and to adopt a plant-based diet, but you certainly, like with a lady with lupus, if she had not changed and it had been 10 or 20 years later and she was already crippled with debilitating arthritis and her kidneys have failed and stuff, there's no going back from that, you know. You can't undo that damage. That's permanent. And it's so important to change and to do it as early as possible.
Is your family plant-based?
Nobody in my family is completely plant-based like I've done, but I've definitely seen a lot of changes, a lot of positive changes, and much more fruits and vegetables. My father just lost probably 60 or 70 pounds from his all-time high weight, and he's done it mainly through switching towards more plant-based nutrition. He's eating a lot of brown rice and beans and fruit and whole grains and, you know, some vegetables and stuff, and, you know, a lot less meat and basically no dairy. My brother's given up dairy. He was lactose intolerant, and finally he figured out that that was a problem. So he rarely ever has dairy, and when he does, he pays for it. So it's nice to see some improvement and some positive change, you know. And it's, you know, what we eat is very personal. It's a very personal decision. And I just try to support and encourage them all along the way, whether they decide to completely go plant-based or just make some changes.
What benefits have you seen in your life since you went plant-based?
I actually had, I've had migraine headaches since I was 10 years old, migraine headaches and then tension headaches as well. And my tension headaches have all but disappeared. My migraine headaches have reduced quite a bit in frequency. So I used to get them at least 3, 4, 5 times a month. And now if I get one a month or every other month, you know, that's about where I'm at now. So I've made tremendous strides in reducing that. And another thing is I have irritable bowel disease, or irritable bowel syndrome, I'm sorry, irritable bowel syndrome, especially going to college and all the stress that causes. But I haven't had any of that since going plant-based. Not one. I would wake up in the middle of the night, like at 3 a.m., just clutching my stomach because it was in such pain, the cramping and the pain from irritable bowel syndrome. So there's none of that. I lost about 10 pounds. I've always been very lean and trim, so I didn't really need to lose 10 pounds, but I did lose some pounds. My energy went up, and I just feel, overall, I just feel fantastic. My cholesterol dropped like 30, 35 points total, so I'm definitely heart attack proof. I'm with Dr. Esselstyn. I'm definitely heart attack proof, like he would say. So a lot of good changes, a lot of good changes.
Do you have any problems? I guess you probably take your meals when you're working. Do you have any problems finding food, or any issues going out where you live, socializing?
No, actually, no matter where I go out, I can usually find something. I mean, even if we end up going to a steakhouse, I can usually order a side of steamed vegetables and a sweet potato or something to have plenty to eat. And as far as my schedule, my work schedule, it does create some challenges. You do have to kind of prepare and plan ahead with this. I'm sure you do the same. Working in the medical field, you get so busy. I do 7 days on, 7 days off. So in my 7 day stretch, I'll do my 2 weeks worth of hours, my 80 hours in that one stretch. And I really don't have time to be cooking during that time. I mean, my time outside of work is dedicated to sleep. So what I'll do is during my week off, I'll cook big batches of meals, and then I'll save them in Tupperware dishes and freeze and refrigerate them. And then that way, when I'm on my work week and I don't have a lot of spare time, I just grab something out of the fridge or the freezer and take it on the go. And it works out fantastic. But it does take some, planning ahead and preparing to do that. But it's just a matter of changing habits. I always tell people, it's a matter of changing habits. And you'll get used to grocery shopping a certain way, and eating a certain way, and preparing foods that you still like that are plant-based and that are good for you. And you just get in the habit of doing that. And then after a while, it's just second nature. So I don't even think anything of it. I don't know about you. Do you end up doing the same thing with packing your lunch, or do you find a lot of options for yourself?
Yes. No. I usually I bring my lunch. Usually my routine is I live pretty close to where I work, so I come home and eat my leftovers from the night before, and take the dogs out for a little bit. So that's my. But yes, I do all my own cooking for the most part, probably 95%. I've got to the point, I enjoy cooking, and it's relaxing for me. But during the week, I make meals that are, prepared in 30 minutes, usually. So quick things for the most part. Maybe on the weekend, we'll make something a little bit more extensive, and there'll be more leftovers on that. Or we make a big pot of soup, and there's always leftovers for lunch. So that's kind of, how I go about it. Down here, we have a farmer's market. This was the last week that we get a box every week with the whatever vegetables are ripe. And so you kind of plan your whatever's in the box on Wednesday is kind of how you cook for the rest of the week. And, and then supplement, obviously, with other vegetables that we need. But that's kind of fun because it kind of dictates what you're going to have for that time. And we're eating locally and organic, so that's always good.
Yeah, that's a great way to mix it up because, some people can get, I know sometimes I get stuck in a rut, and you just make the same thing all the time. So that's a wonderful way to mix it up because you never know really what you're going to get in your box.
Yes, except it's been heavy on the zucchini and summer squash. So I've met, you know, it's 50 ways to make zucchini here lately, you know. But I love it, and it's good, and it's, you know, when there's nothing better than fresh vegetables. It tastes so much better, the organic vegetables. So it's, you know, it's still fun to, you know, make different things, you know, with the vegetables and learning new vegetables. You know, I grew up in West Virginia, and I wasn't a fruit eater at all. You know, I always make the joke, if I had any fruit, it was in a pie, you know, but it was the traditional, you know, peaches, cherries, you know, apples type of deal. But, you know, I've been experimenting and learning about new fruits just really in the last year or so here in Florida. I mean, I when I first went plant-based, I wasn't too real focused on, you know, I just wasn't that much of a fruit eater, but, I've, you know, really, you know, got into papayas, and now I've tried some of the black sapota fruits, and you know, just, you know, more melons, and there's and mangoes, and there's just always, you know, always a variety of fruit and pineapples all around. So it's great fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I was kind of like you when I grew up. If it wasn't an apple or a banana, it was we didn't really have it up in Montana. We didn't have all these tropical fruits readily available to us. So it's been just a pleasure to try all these things out down here. And I'm a huge mango fan. I don't know about you, but I love mangoes.
Oh, yes. I love them. And especially those, I've just discovered the gold ones this year. Those little smaller.
Oh, yeah.
And all those are really tasty. So I've been trying to get all those I can. So speaking of Montana, do you go back, or is that someplace you moved from a long time ago and no roots back there?
My roots are still back there. I still have a lot of family back there, and I go back every few years. I went back. I was just back this past year, and you know, it's nice to see everybody. I'm in a really small town, so there's not much as far as places to, you know, dine out and eat this way back there. It really is a small town meat and potatoes kind of a place, and the potatoes are usually fried in oil. So, you know. And they actually only have one grocery store, and very, very small. But, you know, I was able to make do. I use a lot of, Jeff Novick's tips, Jeff Novick, dietitian down in Fort Lauderdale. He has those fast food DVDs, and I've watched those, and usually wherever I go, I can always find something that, Jeff has put together wonderfully in those DVDs to make a really good meal out of. You know, pick a whole grain, like I love brown rice or sweet potatoes or potatoes, and then I can find some kind of frozen vegetables or frozen fruits, if anything, you know, and I'm really desperate for something. I can usually find those, and everybody has canned tomatoes, so you know, I can usually throw a batch of something really good together and make do, so. Yeah.
And you bring your covered dish to your family reunion so you'll have something to eat.
Yeah. Well, I usually do that with most of my gatherings, with friends and whatnot down here, too. I mean, I have a lot of friends who are not plant-based, so, you know, it's nice for them to try new things, too. I've gotten some of them interested, so, you know, it's always great. I'm sure that you've been able to get some people interested just by sharing dishes that you make that are plant-based and taste delicious too.
Yeah, I think that's really probably the best way to go about it. You know, once people realize what you eat and that it actually tastes good and it's just not lettuce and celery and carrots, you know, that they're quite surprised. And it's like, oh, you know, the first thing is like, I could eat this and this is pretty good. And, you know, so I think that's probably the best advertisement is a good meal shared with the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you talk at some vegan, do you belong to some vegan groups up in, are you in Tampa Bay area, correct?
In the Tampa Bay area. Yep.
So do you attend vegan groups, plant-based groups? What kind of groups are up there that you attend?
I just recently found out about a Whole Foods plant-based potluck group that meets monthly, and I was really excited to meet all of them and go to their potlucks last few months, because they are truly right along the lines of what I talk about in my book, where it's no animal foods and then no oils and no processed foods. And there's a lot of vegetarian and vegan groups out there to look at. But I do notice that many of them include a lot of, processed foods or a lot of oils in their dishes and stuff. And, I try with all my might to stay away from that stuff if I can. So it was really refreshing to find this group. And it's just a wonderful group of people. We just meet at somebody's house once a month and we all bring a dish and, there's no oil and it's all healthy plant foods. And it's just awesome because you get to try so many different dishes, and then usually everybody brings a recipe, what they made. So if you want to just grab a copy of the recipe, you can take it home and try a new dish out.
Yeah, I think those are great. I attended one up in Sarasota a while back, and it's really good dishes, so that's always exciting. Yeah, sometimes... And again, I know when people start to talk, they're, the different camps as far as vegan, plant-based, raw. I think that it's good to, focus on our similarities, that basically, we're all looking to be healthy and, help the environment and, by being healthy, you can do whatever you want. So whether it's help protect the rights of other animals, and but you have to be healthy first. And the more good food that you can display, I think it helps everybody.
Absolutely, yeah. It's nice to connect with people, regardless of where they're at on their journey, because we're all at different stages on our journey. When I started transitioning to plant-based, I didn't do it overnight, and it took some learning, and I didn't just go to my cupboard and take everything out of the pantry and throw it all away and start all over again. And some people do that, and some people need to do that because they have very serious diseases that could be deadly. But everybody has a different way of doing things, and so it helps me remember that there's all different kinds of ways to go about this, and that people are on a different point in their journey in their life, and we all just need help where we are, and support and getting together with people. I think it's a great idea if you're out there and you're trying this lifestyle out to find other people, some meetup groups or some potluck groups or something to meet other like-minded people who are doing this, because it makes it much more doable in the long run and sustainable. When you're out there and nobody in your family and none of your friends do it and you're trying to do this, it does present some challenges because, just the peer pressure and just the convenience of everybody else has their foods and, what am I going to eat? And to meet other like-minded people, it makes it so much easier to do this transition and this kind of lifestyle.
Perfect. Well, maybe we can get you down to Port Charlotte to talk about your book and do a signing down here at our meetup group.
I'd love to do that.
All right, we'll have to set that up.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that would be good. All right, well, I won't take up any more of your time since I hope you're on one of your 7 days off as opposed to your 7 days on.
I am, thankfully.
All right, good. Well, rest up and keep doing the great work that you're doing, and I'll be in touch to get you down this way.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Delaney, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, and thank you for your wonderful book.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
It's fantastic to have two foreign D's that are plant-based living so close in Florida. So, again, check out Dustin's great book, The Empty Medicine Cabinet, The Pharmacist's Guide to the Hidden Danger of Drugs and the Healing Powers of Food. Dustin works at a hospital up in the Tampa Bay area, and it's such a shame that they don't realize what a gem they have with Dustin, this physician, this doctor of pharmacology, being able to give them so much more than medicine, pharmaceuticals. He has another whole bag of tricks, the medicine of nutrition. So hopefully more and more people in the hospital wake up and put him to work in a nutrition plan and reviving the nutrition of his hospital. We're working on that here in Port Charlotte, and I hope to have a meeting in the future, in the near future, with one of the hospitals and the dietary staff. You know, they have added some vegan options to the menu. Now comes a time to educate the people when they're taking the menus from the patients, because if they give this menu that happens to have vegan options on it, but the patients haven't been educated on healthy choices to choose, then they're never going to choose it. So we need to get them selling the plant-based way a little bit more. A while back, I mentioned the COURAGE trial, looking at patients with coronary artery disease that were either to undergo stenting or medical therapy. And this was the study was actually published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it was in April of 2007. And basically, you know, after an average of 4.5 year follow-up, they still had a 19% incidence in in heart attacks or the need for emergent angioplasty in a patient population that contained 2,287 patients. So this is compared to Dr. Esselstyn's group, where there were essentially no events. So it was one event that was deemed an event, but certainly wasn't an acute heart attack. So, you know, it's amazing the power of nutrition to treat coronary artery disease and reverse coronary artery disease. And basically, you know, again, we look at plaques. When people have stable angina or diffuse coronary artery disease that's been longstanding, or the ones that we pick up sometime on stress testing, those plaques are hard. There's a lot of collagen in them, or fibrous type tissue, but the plaques that rupture could be 20% the nights before. And those plaques are very, rich in cholesterol, and they have a thin membrane on top. And there's a lot of inflammation in macrophages, which are white blood cells that are inflamed. So you can see the power, of nutritional therapy. If you get your cholesterol down, you reduce this plaque burden and things stabilize out, and you're going to be much safer in the long term. So that'll about wrap it up for this evening. Again, if you have any questions, you can always find me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. Dustin can be found at plantbasedpharmacist.com. That's all lowercase. Again, check out his book. It's in all the usual places. He's in Florida as well. His website is really a lot of good information there as well. So if you have any questions, give us a call, or give us give us an email, and we'll be glad to get back to you. I would always like a good rating on iTunes. We're getting several in now. It just helps to make the show more popular and get it out to more people. And I would love to hear from somebody from West Virginia that possibly could be listening to this podcast, and how we could possibly get the word out to, you know, one of my favorite states in the union. I so desperately would like to see the incidence of coronary artery disease, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, and diabetes go down in that state. So if anybody's out there listening and would even like me to come and lecture, back and forth to that state quite a bit since my daughter's up there in school, I'd be happy to come give a talk at some local group if you thought I could make a difference or provide some education. So keep the feedback coming. Thank you very much, and eat plant strong and run long.